Genesis chapter 40. As you're turning there, I am only partially sorry for being here this morning. I understand I'm a disappointment. A couple people have said, "You're here." I thought Matt and Robert were going to speak today. I thought, "Wow, you're not surprised I'm here." Like, "Yeah, you are. Wow." Matt and Robert don't get to speak to us today. That was not my doing, by the way. I also disappointed a younger audience, too. I told Jordan Oliver this earlier. I am always happy to help our kids here with anything that I possibly can. And maybe it's because of the Benjamin connection, but Brooks came running up to me in between Bible class and he said, "Hey, excuse me, is it going to rain tomorrow?" I said, I don't know that one, buddy. I'm sorry.
Dave again pointed out maybe he thought I had a good connection to someone who would know. But I didn't think James Spann would appreciate me calling him at this moment. In Genesis chapter 40, we learn about people who are going through tough times, and really you could argue from the sake of history, and certainly chronologically in the Bible story, in the case of Joseph, they are being treated unfairly, and life is a disappointment. I got a call one time as I was a teenager in my parents' house, and my sister called and said, "We're stuck." And I said, "I don't know what that means, but it sounds hilarious." And her boyfriend had been driving and trying to make curfew, took the exit a little fast, and his Explorer got stuck right in between the interstate going on and the interstate exit. And he was stuck in the mud, and guess who was going to come help get them out? Dad and brother, everyone's favorite team to join in on the date. They were stuck. And there was nothing they could do about it. He could wish that he hadn't done it. He could wish that he went back and went a different pathway. Wish they left 10 minutes earlier. Wish that they didn't call me, who thought this moment was fantastic. But they had done it. The car was stuck, and they needed help to get out. Genesis chapter 40, we pick up just shortly after chapter 39, of course, where Joseph has been in prison for what we literally call righteousness' sake. As Potiphar's wife is wishing for him to lie with her, he flees, garment left in her hand. And she says, of course, he was trying to lie with me, and Joseph is thrown in prison. Chapter 40, verse 1, "Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. And he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. Now, captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them, and they continued for some time in custody. And one night they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each to his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody of his master's house, 'Why are your faces downcast today?' And they said to him, 'We have had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them.' And Joseph said to them, 'Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me.' So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, 'In my dream there was a vine before me, and on the vine there were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand.' And Joseph said to him, 'This is the interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit." As we think about this story of Joseph, and as we're moving forward with our study this morning, what we realize is in chapter 40, Joseph is in an incredibly unfair situation. He is, as we would call it, stuck. And when you consider the idea of being stuck, you say, okay, well, did you get there because of your fault? Joseph didn't. Didn't really matter. Was the cupbearer there because of some fault that belonged to him? Well, we don't really know. It doesn't really matter because he's in there. The question is not, am I stuck? The question is, what am I going to do now that I am in that situation? And so as you look then at verse 5, we understand from the beginning some things we need to keep in mind about being stuck. First and foremost, it doesn't matter why I'm there. Go back to chapter 39. Read with me what we've said out loud. In verse 11 of chapter 39, "One day when he went into the house to do his work and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment saying, 'Lie with me.' But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, 'The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house.' As soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, he said, 'This is the way your servant treated me.' His anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed." Now, as we think about what's happening in this story, we realize Joseph is not only getting a bad hand, but he's getting an entirely bad life into the stick. And so you say to myself, well, if I am stuck, what should I do? First and foremost, stop looking backwards. It really doesn't matter how I got here. It matters that I am here. Now, secondly, what does Joseph do? As we're looking at what Joseph has done, we realize he is someone who is going to just make the best of where he's at. He is there unfairly. If he was me, he'd be crying out, "This isn't fair. I didn't deserve to be thrown into a pit. I didn't deserve to be thrown into slavery. I don't deserve to be in prison." But what is happening with God at the end of chapter 39? He's making whatever is in his hand to succeed. I think that's a powerful point for us to realize that God can work with us from wherever we are. And where we are might not be where we hoped we were. And that's an important distinction. But what is Joseph doing in verse 1 through 4 that sets up this great opportunity from God himself? In verse 1, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, their king. And he puts them where in verse 3? In custody of the house of the captain of guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. Isn't it funny how it works out that way? That he ends up exactly where Joseph was. As we think about where and how God works through us, we have to say, you know, I don't always understand how and why I get somewhere, but I can control one thing and one thing alone. And what is that? What I do with where I've been placed. Joseph is willing to interpret those dreams. And when we think about his interpreting of the dreams in verse 5, he is making an impact instead of just feeling stuck and staying there. He's moving forward. When he takes not only the cupbearer's dream, in verse 16, the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable. He said to Joseph, "I also had a dream. There were three cake baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head." And Joseph answered and said, "This is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. In 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you." What Joseph did not do and interpreting a dream is make everyone's dreams come true. He didn't just tell the chief cupbearer, "Okay, here's a guy, he's going to be pretty powerful in a little bit. I'm going to tell him what he wants to hear." Because it sounds like that at first, and then what happens? Well, he has this word spread. And now he has a choice with this next interpretation. Do I tell the truth? Or do I tell something that will benefit me in this moment where I'm stuck? Because what we sometimes do as people is we get stuck and we say, okay, I'm going to make the best of this moment. And what do? We dig the hole deeper. We do that with bad habits. We do that with old habits. And most importantly, we do that with unrighteous actions. We do things that make a situation worse. Perhaps in this case, Joseph could have just lied, but he didn't. He told the ugly truth to the chief baker that in 3 days, in verse 19, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree. Now, this isn't exactly what we'd call a happy story in chapter 40 because Joseph's unfairly imprisoned and the cupbearer is in prison and the chief baker is in prison, and that's almost a better spot than what he has coming for him. And we said, this isn't a happy story at all. And sometimes life isn't just a simple happy story if we divorce ourselves from God and God's control and God's love. See, God is helping Joseph through all of this. Whatever he did was made to succeed at the end of chapter 39. Then the chief cupbearer and the baker find themselves where in verse 3 of chapter 40? Right in Joseph's custody. And they have what problem while they're in Joseph's custody? the ability to interpret dreams. By the way, interpreting dreams is the very thing that led to all of Joseph getting into prison in the first place, isn't it? Sibling 101, do not do this. I have seen fights over much less, and by much less I mean a piece of cookie has led to a divide in a household over siblings. And what did Joseph say because of a dream? All of you, my brothers and dad, are going to bow down to me. Shockingly, they didn't love that. And so while it's not fair to say, okay, well, we should kill him or throw him into prison, that's what they did. They threw him into a pit, sold into slavery, went to Potiphar's house where he was successful, and then once again, for the sake of righteousness, is being punished and put into prison, where now the chief baker and cupbearer have run into him. Isn't it amazing how God's plan works, despite the way we think this is incredibly unfair at every single stage? Yet Joseph's legend spreads, and despite that, we say, well, this is the story. God is using Joseph to do great things, and if Joseph would just hang on, everything would be wonderful. But that's not how chapter 40 ends either. On the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet, the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Isn't that kind of a dour note to end chapter 40 on? He's here unfairly at the beginning of chapter 40, and he's left unfairly. The only thing Joseph wanted to interpret this dream, by the way, to the good one, the chief cupbearer, the one who's going to get his life back, is please do me this kindness and remember me. And Joseph was forgotten. If you're keeping score, Joseph has been mistreated by everyone that's around him. That includes his father, his brothers, the slave traders, Potiphar, Potiphar's wife for sure, and now even the person he's directly only helping in prison with him, the chief cupbearer. This isn't fair. This isn't right. And because it's not fair and right, what are the consequences Joseph is facing? It's not a crisis of confidence. It's he's stuck in prison. Now, chapter 41 says, after 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile, and we understand how the story is going to shift into how Joseph is going to be remembered at this time. But at best, you're looking at close to 2 years on a conservative side that Joseph would have been in this prison. And that is not fair, especially when you realize someone failed him to put him there. Joseph didn't do that. Potiphar's wife, Potiphar, and the chief cupbearer who forgot him are leading to him being there. And so we realize we get stuck for a variety of reasons. And so it's not about how to avoid getting stuck. Following God is probably the best thing we can do to try to do that. But the Bible never tells us in Genesis 1 through Revelation 22, if you follow me, your life will be pain-free. In fact, it often shares the opposite. And that shouldn't be a surprise because Jesus faced the opposite and he was perfect. No one deserved any of what he faced, and he took the worst that mankind had to offer. If history is right and Jesus' prophecy is right, the latter of which is always true, Peter would die because of his righteousness and commitment to God. Sometimes these things happen. And despite it all, one thing we need to remember is God is always in control. Now, God is always in control is not code for if you say the right prayers, if you have enough faith, and that God offers you enough grace, you're going to get the home, life, and family of your dreams. That is not what the promise is. But one thing that's interesting is just from a point of fact. Has God at any point in time lost control of being the sovereign creator while Joseph is doing really well? Well, no. We say, of course, that's God fulfilling his purpose through Joseph. Did he stop being in control when Joseph was unfairly treated by his brothers? Or when he was sold into slavery? Or when he's put into prison or in Potiphar's house? Or now when he's being forgotten? Has God just kind of vacated the eternal throne? Of course not. But while we would never say that out loud, do we sometimes feel that when we are stuck and we don't know where else to turn, we think, if God was really there and if God really cared for me, he would do something about that. Well, read stories like Job and with the Israelites moving into, out of, and back into the land of Canaan with Jesus and the disciples. God is in control. All the meanwhile, I and so many people in the world are doing all sorts of cruel, dark, and sinful things. Just because God allows free will doesn't mean he has vacated control. And that's a problem that has doctrinal ramifications as well as trust, faith, and getting me through hard time ramifications and consequences. But if I know God's always in control, it helps me. Notice in chapter 40 and verse 12, Joseph is able to give the interpretation in the prison. This isn't something Joseph was just born doing. This is a gift God had given him. In verse 12, this is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office. And you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. And of course, in verse 18, he has an interpretation for the chief baker as well. One positive, one negative. But where did this power come from? It came from God. God didn't stop caring about Joseph. God didn't stop using Joseph just because he was being unfairly treated, just because he was stuck in prison. There was still work to do. And God was willing to use Joseph to do that. Now, a couple points of fact. When you're talking to someone who's struggling like this, the easiest thing to do is to look at a story like Joseph, and I know I can feel the thoughts coming at me and say, that's right, God's in control. If you will just hang on Joseph for 3 quick Bible page turns, his life is going to be awesome. He's going to be second in all of Egypt, and isn't that what God wants? When God's in control, what that means for me is it's going to work out. It's just going to be a real problem to get there. Look at me in Hebrews chapter 11. The hall of faith. If there is any group of people who have the faith that it takes to please God, without which it's of course impossible to please him, it's in Hebrews chapter 11. And we like verses 32 through 35a a lot. But can you guess where the part we don't like kicks in if I said through 35a? 35b. 32, Hebrews chapter 11. What more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight, women received back their dead by resurrection, and we say, yes, that's my God. That's what a God who's in control and who rewards those who have faith is and does. That's my God. 35b. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release so they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were killed with a sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. And all these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better for us, that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. A bunch of lessons there. But to help us with our feeling stuck lesson this morning, sometimes I'm going to be afflicted, destitute, and mistreated because of, or even to be kind, in spite of my faith. That's going to happen. But does that mean God has lost even an ounce of control? Of course not. And there are powerful consequences to the fact that God is there and he cares. When Jesus would say, do not be anxious about things of this life, we say, that's really difficult because we all struggle with that. And yet Peter would write in 1 Peter 5, verse 7, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. That is amazing. The God who is in control cares about me and my worries. By the way, the worries I was told I shouldn't be having because it's a faith crisis. It means God understands I will struggle with things I shouldn't. God understands I will struggle with things that are difficult, that are out of my control. Joseph was afflicted, mistreated, and left destitute. And God didn't leave him for a moment. And God didn't leave him for a moment while he was in prison. Not just because years later he would take care of him in a different way. God was with him every step of the way. And one of the things I have to embrace then that is difficult is that God's planning and his timing is better than mine. And again, good news is sometimes that means that if I'll hang on, something better will come. The reality is that's not always true either, but the fact is God has the entire tapestry. We talked before about putting together puzzles. I like puzzles. And there are people that I call anarchists, and they like to go from the middle of a puzzle first. Well, what a normal person does is we work on the edges because we have the corner pieces, and then we can build in and get a better picture. What we do, though, is we pick 5 or 6 pieces that we like, that we're drawn to, or for some reason want the challenge of, and we start with those. God has the entire thing. He has the entire series, the collection of all the boxes of all the puzzles. He knows what it's supposed to look like. I hold my 6 pieces up, and I go, I don't like the way this looks. These aren't fitting together yet. Well, maybe because there's more pieces in the box. Maybe I'll like the picture, maybe I won't. Either way, God's planning and timing is bigger and better than mine. Look in the book of Habakkuk. So the first challenge, of course, is to find the book of Habakkuk. And as you're turning there, notice Habakkuk is someone who has this essentially argument with God. And this is why I love this. Because Habakkuk is a prophet, and he's a prophet I can kind of be like. Because he says, God, I want you to punish all those people who are wicked. And God said, I will, and I'm going to use Babylon to do it. And he goes, I didn't want you to use those people. They're worse than we are. What are you doing? And notice at the end, as God replies to him, first of all, God says, I am aware of who I am. I'm aware of who you are. I'm aware of who the Babylonians are. In Habakkuk chapter 2, notice in verse 1, as Habakkuk is lobbying his second complaint, these people are more wicked. You see that in chapter 1 and verse 13. He does say at the end, I will take my stand at my watchpost and station myself on the tower and look out to see what he will say to me and what I will answer concerning my complaint. And the Lord answered me, write the vision, make it plain on tablets so he may run who reads it. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright within him, but the righteous shall live by his faith. God's going to go on in chapter 2 to say, Habakkuk, I promise you, I know how wicked Babylon is. I promise you, I'm going to punish them too. But I find it more amazing that God's even having this conversation with Habakkuk. But if you notice first, Habakkuk, for all his faults and his willingness to speak up in a way that makes us kind of queasy, I love what he says in verse 1. I'm going to take my stand at the post. I'm going to look out to see and essentially listen to what God is going to say to me. Why? Because God's the only one offering the plan and the words that will matter. I might disagree with God every step of the way, and what's that going to benefit me? None. I might be unfairly afflicted and mistreated like Joseph. Does that change my circumstance? No. What can and who does? God and God alone. What does God say? Well, God says in verse 2, write it down so that what can happen? There's going to be a judgment on Babylon. And by the way, write it down so that he may run who reads it. Why would you run away from something written if it is really, really bad and you are confident it's going to happen? Just like with the question of the weather this morning, I don't really know what's going to happen tomorrow. But if I knew a tornado was coming, what would I do? I would run as far away as I could. I was in Florida and they said a hurricane was coming. I would stay in my house because it was for sure going to miss. Okay, but when they say a tornado is coming, you take it seriously because you don't want to be in that line. God is telling us all the time, cast your anxieties on me because I care for you. Do not be anxious. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. But what we're going to see with Joseph as we start to conclude our lesson this morning is the way to get unstuck is not to just wait for God to magically do it. I'm supposed to do something while stuck with the people I'm stuck with and maybe interacting with the people who got me stuck in the first place. And that means acknowledging people will let me down. In 2 Timothy 4 and verse 10, look with me there. We look at this normally from a spiritual first connotation, as we should. But in 2 Timothy chapter 4, as Paul is at the end of his life, we think about how he's reaching out to Timothy, and he's just said that I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. And we think about how emotional it is that Paul is pouring out his heart to his beloved Timothy. And then in verse 9 and 10, he says, do your best to come to me soon, for Demas, in love with this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. And we think, first of all, people who are devoted to God, like Demas has been in other epistles, can fall away. And that's a spiritual problem that we all face. But think about it for a moment interpersonally. If you're Paul, one of your closest workers, Paul only cares about what one thing, to please God, souls. That's all he cares about. And what has the beloved Demas, who has worked with him for years at this point, done? Deserted him and deserted the cause of Christ because he's, quote, in love with the present world. That's not fair. That's not right. And I don't think Paul's preaching is to blame for Demas' falling away. I don't think the eldership of Peter or whoever was around Demas is to blame. Demas loved this world, and so he went for it. One thing I have to acknowledge is people are going to operate outside of my control, which is probably mostly good, by the way. But it also means when they do bad things to me, it's going to happen. And I still have to have a response. I still have to please God. Paul didn't lose his faith because Demas fell away. But can we acknowledge that this is probably breaking Paul's heart that someone like Demas would desert, to use his words, him, has deserted me in love with this present world. Joseph was let down at every turn. I don't know how Joseph kept standing back up after the world insisted on knocking him down over and over and over again, but he did. And the amazing thing about Joseph's story is, at least from the snippets we have in Genesis, he never seems to question God the way Habakkuk did or the way I would. He just keeps on serving where he is and how he can. But one thing I have to do is remember, if God is in control, and if his plan and timing is better than mine, then when people let me down, I'm not worried about that because people were never holding me up. God is the only one who can hold us up. If I'm reliant upon parents, a spouse, or another person, a preacher, elders, deacons, Bible class teachers, whoever, prepare to be dropped. People make mistakes. Now, it is amazing that there are so many good influences here at this church. We have strong elders, strong wives with them, strong Christians everywhere. When there is a need, people flock to it. When there are Bible studies, people go to hear God's word. That is amazing and awesome. And find those good examples. But don't let your faith rest on another human who will make mistakes when there is God who is offered to hold you up, who will never fail you, will never leave you, nor never forsake you. So I understand God's holding me up and others can't let me down. But what do I do in the meantime? Number one, I need to serve in two capacities: wherever I am and however I can. It's interesting that the end of chapter 39 in Genesis, it says, whatever Joseph did, the Lord had it succeed. Think about all the things Joseph was good at. Really not great interpersonally with his brothers, but he could interpret dreams when he was in the family. And then when he sold into slavery, he rises through the ranks and he's basically in control of Potiphar's house. Then he's in control in the prison. In Genesis chapter 40, who are the chief cupbearer, whose custody is he placed into? Joseph's. Why? Because God's using Joseph wherever he is, and he's being successful. So he has charge in the prison. Even the 2 years he's forgotten, what happens? Joseph then is called out of that prison in chapter 41, and who does he go straight to interpret the dream of? Pharaoh. Wherever Joseph is, he just helps how he can. Wouldn't it be pretty easy to fold your arms and say, look, the world turns its back on me. I'm done. I'm not going to be with this group of people who knew about this mistreatment. I'm not going to be with the person who mistreated me. I'm not going to be with any group or anything that has touched the poison tree. That's not Joseph's MO. Joseph serves wherever he is, up to and including, by the way, years later when he is in control in Egypt, essentially, when guess who comes back in desperate need of his help? The brothers who mistreated him, left him for dead, and sold him into slavery all those years ago. One of the things that happens when I feel stuck is I'm looking at the prison walls and the doors closed around me. And when I'm in the pit, I'm stuck saying, I can't get out. I'm stuck in the mud and I realize I can only call my sister's brother. I can only call her dad to help. And sometimes I have a pride problem because I get caught up. The devil wants me to stare at the pit. I go, I'm better than that. Christians are better than that. I know I need help, but I don't want to ask for help because that would make me look, you fill in the blank, what, weak? What's weak is staying somewhere in the pit where the devil wants you because we won't take the time, effort, or make the prideful sacrifice to come out of it and to serve God. God wants us to serve. When you think about Mount Carmel and Elijah, of course, he has this great victory in 1 Kings chapter 18, one of the strongest miracles in the Bible, perhaps in between the parting of the Red Sea and in Jesus' resurrection. You have the fire come down, and the people who follow God are on fire. They're killing the false prophets. And then Jezebel's wife turns on Elijah, and what does he do in chapter 19? He hides in a cave. I think it's important to note, not only is Elijah having a crisis of faith, he says, it's not enough for me, take my life now, there's no one left, I'm the only follower, that's wrong. But even if he wasn't sinning in that way, where is God's strongest prophet in chapter 19? Even if there was no sin involved, which I think is arguable, he's on the sideline doing nothing. We are expected to serve when I'm thrown in the pit unfairly or in prison unfairly, serve where you are. Paul did that. In Philippians chapter 1, he's writing his epistle that we have to this day while in chains, while in prison, and he's thinking about the good of the gospel because it's never been about him. It's never been about his chains. Paul saw it was about souls. And so I need to make sure when I am stuck, I am looking up over the horizon to say, who can I help while I'm in the pit? Maybe I'm going through something that you're going through and we can work together to get out. Maybe I came out of the pit and I can look back and see, I know someone who's going through exactly what I have, and I'm going to help them where they are to get to where they need to be. There are so many options for help if we will allow God to use us and stop making life about me. Joseph just served wherever he was, however he could. Do you have some resources you can share? Please do so. Do you have time? Spend it. Can you write a card? Pin one. There are so many ways to serve, and we are limited only by our time that God has given us, and he commands of us to redeem it. When I'm stuck, I need to remember to keep my eyes only on Jesus. In Hebrews chapter 12, right where we left off, in our first point, Hebrews chapter 11, that faith in a God that controls everything means even when it seems like the bad guys win and the good guys are failing, I need to remember to keep my eyes on Jesus. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. What are we learning from God? We're learning that there is a strong expectation that we might grow weary, that it might be hard for us to do the right thing. And the point, the fact is, we have a moment this morning to decide, what will I do? Not just to avoid potholes, not just to avoid being stuck, but what will I do when I am there? When I feel weary, when I am faint-hearted, will I sit on the sideline like Elijah? Will I give up like Demas? Or will I serve to the best of my ability like Joseph, knowing God is in control, his plan is bigger and better than mine, and other people were never holding me up? Cast your anxieties on God who cares for you. Be aware that there is an opportunity and an option to be better and to not worry about what this life has to offer. And one of the bad parts of a lesson like this is to not be able to say, everything's going to be great if you'll just hold on. It was for Joseph. But he still had to go through a mean several years to get there. But there is one thing that's true. No matter what Satan throws at you, no matter what someone throws at you, no matter how I may fail you, God is there for you. And what's waiting is something far better than this life could possibly even offer, an eternity with our Maker. Praise be to God that there is a joy that can never be snatched. If you're here this morning, you've never become a Christian, recognize that joy is there, but you have to access it through the Creator's way. He says that we need to believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. We need to confess him as Lord. That means he is in control. He calls all the shots. Repent of the sins of choosing my way over his, and be baptized, sharing in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus himself. Or maybe you're a Christian and you felt stuck. You are stuck. And you realize you need God's help. God's help isn't just in prayer. It's also through brothers and sisters. And we're here for you. We want to hug you. We want to pray with you. And we want God to forgive you. If we can.